Pride and Flags, and welcome to a new episode of Entrepreneurs Playing Games podcast edition. About every 2 weeks, I host a live video stream where I deep dive into startup founders' journey after playing video games with my guest. Here is the audio version of our discussion. If you are interested in the full video, be sure to check out my YouTube channel at youtube.com/AmandineFlags. For any questions, suggestions, or just to say hi, you can find me on Twitter at AmandineFlags or at EntrepreneursPG. In this week's episode, I have the pleasure to be joined by Gillian and Gary from Safe in the City. Let's get started with a bit more background about Safe in the City. Can you tell me more about what it is, what you're working on?
Great. Yeah. Happy to start. So Safe in the City first came as an idea when I moved from Canada over to London. Originally, I was kind of setting up my career in public health and epidemiology after finishing my master's here. But with that, I still found that I was using navigation apps quite a bit, and that, you know, there was quite a big gap in terms of the, you know, spaces I was being taken and not necessarily feeling comfortable or knowing really what was ahead. And after, I guess, one particular experience that really just stood out a bit in terms of, you know, kind of seeing it in the bigger picture, like kind of the data and the whole experience and how it could have actually been, you know, continue to still be a problem. So it was following the fastest route, which took me through an alleyway, and then had an altercation with two men who were working and taking a smoking break. But after kind of leaving, getting out of the situation, luckily, it kind of painted a picture that actually there was a lot of data points that could have been captured. And for me, I would have liked an app that not only could get me from point A to point B, but always had safety in mind, always had something that I could also contribute to, maybe go, hey, that didn't actually amount to an actual crime where I felt like I needed to call the police. But, you know, it's probably something that's going to continue to happen again. And if we don't have people contributing to it, then we don't actually know the realities of safety. And that's something that we all kind of can agree that we need. Gary got involved, I guess, a year and a bit later.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. We met at Runway East. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, I mean, I basically was just asking him lots of development questions, and I think he could see that there was maybe some maybe not so good people involved at certain points. So he would kind of step in and be like, let me help out a little bit. And then...
Yeah, it was a really natural thing. And Jill snapped it up as soon as the opportunity came.
Yeah, I spotted kind of a situation in the co-working space, and I just had this thing of like, I don't think he's working for this other company anymore. And like right away, I was like, Gary, can we talk? And
he's like, can we talk now?
Yeah, he's like, yes, yeah, soon. I'm like, no, how about right now? Anyways.
Okay, that's interesting because it comes from a personal experience, but the first thing you thought, as you said, was, oh, we need more data point on this. I don't know who could actually be in a situation in the street and be like, oh, I need data point on that. That's quite really data-driven, right?
Very much so. And I think, you know, it's one of those things too, when you do start, you know, whether you're thinking, I have this career path in mind and, you know, you're passionate about helping other people. I did psychology and then I did public health, and I wanted to work, or I was working in kind of HIV and, you know, being able to uncover kind of people's issues, but how does that actually impact population? So even though sometimes it's not the direct route, I thought I was going to go into academia, or I was, and then it just totally veered. But I think that lens also really helped me see a problem, apply it to tech, and kind of create a business and an amazing team around it, and really, you know, hopefully doing a lot of good. Mm-hmm.
So, Gary, can you tell us a bit more about this moment where she snapped you?
It was as dramatic as it sounds, honestly. So Jill and I met, we sat across the desk from each other. And we would just chat, whatever, all the time.
I think I brought you guys treats because I sat by a bunch of developers.
She knows how to make some good cookies.
I might need your help at some point, so let's feed.
Yeah, and it genuinely was, as it was can we talk now? And so yeah, it kind of happened like that. I mean, before that, like Jill said, it's the company is something I was always interested in, something I really believed in. Mm-hmm. So it was a really easy, natural thing for me to jump in full time at.
And that was something too that Gary actually was in a hackathon
in
Glasgow.
Like 6 or 7 years ago, maybe, and come up with a similar concept. Definitely not as fleshed out as Safe in the City is, but yeah, it was something that was really familiar from that sense, okay. And that this is something I've actually tried to build before and thought it's something that needs to exist.
We're talking about hackathons. Yes. Eddie is right now at a hackathon at Microsoft Reactor in London.
Hey.
And he asked a bit of a short questions, but he asked, Jill, when is your hackathon?
Yes, Eddie,
so
I know this has been this has been something we actually wanted to do at the very beginning. Because again, it was such a great community project, and we never actually ended up getting it done for various reasons, but we're actually potentially doing a hackathon with one of the ambition is to do it with an organization that's trying to do the biggest women in data hackathon.
Okay.
So bringing in, you know, all types of people. I mean, anyone can participate, but they want to set the Guinness Book of Records for most women working on one type of problem. Yeah. So we might actually incorporate Safe in the City, potentially doing some open source stuff. Eddie, I know he's always pushing for that. I'm like,
Give
me a minute. We're already having a very, you know, social enterprise commercial model is a really difficult thing. So to master.
Yeah.
But don't worry, we'll get there, and our impact is measurable. The insights are going into the right spaces, so we're really proud about that.
Yeah. Well, I will look forward to it because I'll definitely be stopping by, either as a manager or taking part of the hackathon. Not the best developer either, but it'll be fun.
Well, we were going back to how we met, and I'm pretty sure we met at Code First Girls years ago. So we were learning together, and I really appreciate that environment because it felt like a safe place to kind of learn, and it was quite different from some of the other coding programs. I just
wanted to say hi to Varek. The symbol on this t-shirt is actually the logo of Safe in the City.
The idea behind the name was similar to the TV show, if people get the Sex in the City link, and at least for me, when again it was quite early concept, it was very much looking at a lot of experiences from a female perspective that weren't really recognized in the technologies that we were using. Or again, that was kind of around the hashtag MeToo movement where people were starting to be like, actually, this is a real big problem out there. Sexual harassment, of course, for men too, but it's definitely kind of something that has been normalized for a long time for young women and women of all ages.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, that was kind of the genesis. It was like, I loved the show growing up. My brother introduced me, actually. but it was very much, you know, looking at how these really powerful women were themselves and the different types of relationships. And, you know, I think throughout there wasn't really many unsafe experiences. Like if there were catcalling or this aggressive person in kind of the situation, they were just so good and confident about handling it. And it just was like, what if that was kind of more of the way that we felt about the cities? Like we could be and be who we are, dress how we are, you know, feel empowered in different ways.
We talk a bit about what Safe in the City is. And now I'd like to know what it looks like, because if I am a customer, and I don't know if the app is already available out there, but what if I don't know the app? What happened then? What kind of context do I use the app on, and what do I see on the app?
I'll pass that to
so,
the product owner.
So
you can download now is firstly the thing you have to say. Please download iOS, Android.
Okay.
So for users, what we kind of do is base it around the whole concept of navigation. So it's as you would your normal navigation app, you enter in your destination, and our aim is to get you to where that place is in the safest way possible. We try and give you as much information that we've got based on historical data and our partnership with the Met Police as well. We get quite a bit of data from them, and we try and get you there as safely as possible. So what we try and do is keep you more informed that way. So we're not trying to say here's all the things you need to know, but we're trying to give you the information that you can make informed decisions. So that's for your average user's kind of perspective. That's our main thing. on your journey, if you witness something or you experience something, you can report that in, and that will then go into the kind of data set that we make these decisions based on.
Okay. So who does this? Where does this data go then?
So we keep anonymized versions of all the data, and we store that. We also, with our partnership with the Met Police, so in the particular instance of sexual harassment and sexual assault, the Met Police really want to know some more information about that. They don't know as much as they would like to know. It's a particularly underreported crime, so we anonymize and aggregate that data as well, and we have a data sharing agreement with them.
Okay. So if I use the app, I'm on the street, I notice something, or I feel unsafe because of someone, because of someone's behaviors, and I report it through the app. Is this going to be just reported and just used as a data point, part of other data, or is it actually someone from the police going to have a look at it live and say, okay, maybe there is something here, depending on what I report, and be like, oh, maybe we should send someone actually there?
So at the moment, it's just for kind of aggregation and as a data point. We don't do any kind of real-time response stuff. If there is something that's urgent, we've got 2TAP999 calls, so you can just hit the SOS button basically and phone the police. Like, we'll always recommend that as an emergency situation. But
just like to add on that, so there's, I guess, two reasons why we've, you know, built it as easy as possible. Oh no, do you need some water? I know.
I'm
holding mine. So the app, again, is like Google Maps, but we have kind of targeted messaging when you're going on your route, because when we found, we actually showed all of the information, whether it was police and lighting and this, it just became so much, including how do you get to the next point. So we tried to make that as simple as possible. So it's more targeted push notifications based on the police information that we have. That's something that we've agreed to feed back into their intelligence. So that's kind of public benefit going out to reduce risk of people, but then also kind of understanding the things that they don't know about or it doesn't get reported to them, to also kind of look at the trends in those areas. But the app itself, yeah, you plug in your destination. When you're walking, you can see safe sites. You, as Gary said, you can call 999 if there's actually something happening. We have a partnership with What Three Words. We have a 3x3 meter accuracy.
Okay.
And I can touch on kind of how we're looking at a real-time response in more of event and venue situations. But then you can also report en route experiences. And again, we focus that on sexual harassment for now, but this is something that we can broaden out or customize for different types of areas. And then people rate the walk. So then when you finish the walk, you can also be like, I didn't like that journey. So, you know, as you made mention, there's routes that you wouldn't want to go, then that's actually something that we want to learn in the algorithm. So we, you're actually telling us and contributing to being able to say, actually, these, like, we don't want to send you this way because you don't want to go in a park by yourself. You prefer more well-lit route when you're on your own, and how we can actually change that. So we're learning kind of through the product, and then again, understanding that, you know, crime and safety and these types of social crimes often, you know, again, don't get captured. So how can we be responsive and actually take the insights that we're seeing, plug them into a whole network of people and organizations like the police, like the GLA, the mayor's office, business communities, and also UN Women UK, so that actually maybe, you know, after some time, your experiences now can personalize your kind of customize it to you, and also actually be able to contribute to smarter cities by knowing kind of the experiences that you're having in, on the ground. One of the things I'm really excited about, we've started piloting in venues, is how do we customize the app experience so that when you're going into a space, you get a geofence kind of message if you're going to maybe an O2 concert. And then if you're in the venue and you do need help, then that actually could get help in real time to you, again, with that 3x3 meter accuracy. Again, if something happens, like if you maybe were felt someone was touching you and this was really uncomfortable, you could report it without maybe calling out the bouncer or feeling like, oh, I don't want to, I don't know how to deal with this situation. And again, they could you know, the trained staff could actually be there to be able, like, what would you like us to do, or how can we help, or do you want to debrief about this? So it becomes a lot more of a real understanding of someone's experience, a recognition of being able to be like, how do we continue to train? And then that becomes something that we can measure and really add a big value, like, to a business, to be able to look at preventing certain crimes, looking at getting people help faster and more accurately, how to actually understand and be able to be like, well, if we train people the next time, will they actually, maybe the whole experience will be better, or maybe we'll have more female attendees, or so forth. So that's something we're really excited about developing.
And I guess it also provides, we mentioned a lot that about the fact that just having something recorded, it's not just people complaining on social media that it's really hard to mention, but actually people who actually reported something, and then you can actually go to the next festival or something, organize the next one, and be like, okay, so we had this amount of reports, we definitely need to act on that right now, and then improve on this.
Yeah, one of the biggest things we look at in data is how we can find patterns and stuff, and that's when you can actually start to make decisions based on something. So isolated events are quite, like, you don't want to just take everything on that. If we can find a pattern of three or four things happening that you can recognise, then there's recommendations of change you can make for that.
And then how does that correlate with, like, consumer spend, or how can that actually impact design? Like, that's the, like, much later goal that we'd love to, or how can this enable policy? So I guess that's our big goal, hairy, audacious goal, is being able to be the most responsible data insights provider to enable the design of smarter and safer cities.
And is it just for women? Because you mentioned that potentially it wasn't just for women, but is it your first target audience, or is it already open to everyone and not necessarily just to women in the way it is created?
It's definitely not only for women. Men can use it, or however you identify sexual harassment, especially, I think, for kind of minority groups or young people, is a big issue. And it's something, again, that we don't know the scale of it, because often we just don't know. They're very informal, where you tell people or you keep it secret because it's such a horrible experience. And so it's not necessarily for that, but I think it's formed, and it's just because, you know, I've created the concept, and it started with a lot more conversation and focus on sexual harassment, that a lot more women have become involved. But it's, again, something that we wanted to have a framework and a focus for kind of safety, because it could range from, you know, scary animals on the loose, to broken glass, to, you know, noise complaints, to, you know, racial crimes. So it's almost like it's a universe of things that can make people unsafe. And then, you know, we have to focus it on one particular thing, prove that concept, and then we'd be really excited to maybe move that same kind of model of who we're working with and the communities that are really driving it to, you know, look at how do we maybe do more of a focus for the LGBTQ community, or how can we market and campaign and, you know, work with Stonewall and, you know, these types of groups to actually make sure that it is kind of a two-way street.
I love the you know, I love the fact that it's really, it's targeting something really broad but also very specific, and it will really help put some numbers and figures on something that is generally just a concept, and you know it's happening, but you can't really point out to specific figures because there is so many things untold.
Yeah, for sure.
And you just were telling me on the walk over here about your friend who had something happen last night.
Yeah, a couple of nights ago, and it was just, she was kind of on the way, she was just, I don't really know, I'm not really going to phone the police about that. And I was like, you report it unsafe in the city, and she was like, the penny just dropped. And it was like, that is exactly, there's a real world experience that she was thinking about, and that's exactly where it applies.
And that was kind of our focus, wasn't necessarily, it's on the underreported kind of experiences, because we have a lot of data on, you know, knife crimes, and as much as that's a huge problem and needs a lot of attention, there's a lot of data trails, so to speak, in terms of if someone goes to an A&E with a knife wound, like, you know, the police will get involved, like, they'll be marking that these are these types of wounds. There's a lot more forensics and intel and resources committed to those types of gang-related kind of violence and so forth. So, you know, it's almost flipping it that model on the other side to be like, well, what are the normalized but frequent behaviors? Because knife crime, as much as it's happening, is still very, for general public, a very rare incident. Whereas something, you know, as much as people whistling or following you or not leaving, letting kind of go of maybe, you know, a proposition that you feel really uncomfortable. These are actually experiences that we have a lot of anecdotal and also,
everyone has been
researched
to that.
And it's crazy. Not something that happens just like, oh, it's just because Trump got elected and, you know, he's kind of said it's okay. It's more, you know, this is something happening from childhood onwards, whether it's young boys and girls, but it's something that's been normalized and hidden. So by, you know, empowering people to actually share that, keeping that anonymous, but being able to be like, this is helping someone else's journey. And this could maybe change like the way that the city or the police or the businesses really treat and understand kind of what's going on.
So you're working with already lots of different actors in the space. How did you manage to actually get into working with those different actors? You're working with the London mayor, the UN, the police. So how did you get into this, but also how does this work on a daily basis? Are they all like the Metropolitan Police a partner in a sense that it's directed to them, or is it something also different? Are you working on different levels with them?
We're definitely exploring different levels with like smaller police forces and then kind of like the British Transport Police. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of layers actually into a lot of the, you know, public sector, especially in London. And the UK is coming in from a Canadian too and starting from, you know, the base. But I think, I guess originally how we met with the Met was through very random chance encounter that I met Pete, who was our advisor for a couple years, who was a retired police officer. So he knew who we should speak with, who would be really receptive to this. And again, it served a benefit for them because creating a police focus app, again, relies on people trusting the police or wanting to give the police that, which is something that, again, Google or some of these other products might not just be able to, like, flick a switch and create something and be like, share your personal data with us about, or not personal, sensitive, like, you know, and maybe not have a personal story or connection or understanding of what are you doing with this information. And again, the police can't also share that kind of journey, whereas that's something very important for us to say. Not only are we making sure that safety and crimes are actually dealt with in terms of they know about this and can evolve their kind of intelligence, but then also, you know, the city. So we're working with the night czar, Amy LeMay. So she has, she's in charge of the nighttime economy. So from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m., that's kind of her remit of all of London, which is a huge job. And she's very much about kind of how do we make sure that London can become a very thriving 24-hour city? How can we recognize different types of mobility or concerns for women who work shift or night work? And, you know, how can we actually look at recognizing different groups, even she's really involved in the LGBTQ community, to make sure that, you know, when you are on a night out, that actually is a really safe experience, or, you know, something goes wrong, if there's a drug slipped or, you know, something, there's a lot of resources to help in that situation. And then UN Women was also kind of very serendipitous of how we connected with them. But something probably from a public health, you know, background and doing some work at the World Health Organization, a lot of different big kind of organizations that are working on kind of policy changes to, you know, how do we get more information. It was very synergistic of the one particular program called the Safe Spaces for Women and Girls. And they were very much looking for a product that could also inform how they could take, you know, those insights on a greater level to be able to lobby that for change. So that's something really important that, you know, it's not just a navigation app, it's not just a safety feature or, you know, something that you mark down. It's really kind of making people understand, like, where is it going? And again, if someone comes in and says, hey, we'd like to buy a safe in the city, or, you know, why don't you, there's lots of shiny money over here to do this thing that maybe is not ethical. Like, that's something that by actually anchoring into the organizations, like public sector, it's almost something that we're like, no, we can't really move, because then the police would have to know, and, you know, it would almost disentangle the whole model of being very interconnected and responsible.
You also just came back from the US, where you were also doing a pilot project, or I think something like that. And then you're also going to soon spend some time in Berlin. So I'm wondering, how do you feel the market is outside of the UK? Because we've been talking a lot about the UK and the market here and the different actors here. What is the reception from the different actors in other places?
So we were part of the International Mayors Program. So it was a trade mission to the US Smart City delegation. So I think there's about six different companies, ranging from, you know, I guess digital twins modeling to you know, prop tech AI bots who can help manage your portfolio, and then I guess safe in the city. So we had a really good appetite, especially because we could say, you know, the different ways that we're working with the mayor in London and how that's impacting change. So, you know, there was definitely some really interesting conversations with some transport, with some police, with some big venues and festival organizers, with some universities. And yeah, so that was New York, Chicago, and Detroit. And, you know, those kind of have a natural fit for us. And I think because especially the US market, there's just a lot of focus on safety and security and, you know,
so
anti-terrorism.
For sure.
People are a lot more aware of kind of safety concerns, or having that extreme, like, thinking about guns and things for Canadian, at least. Sorry, people.
That's a bit less of a problem here. Slowly.
So it puts safety kind of at the forefront. And yeah, we were in a Vodafone accelerator called F-Lane. So we're starting that next week. And that's very much a female founder focused kind of accelerator, where they're really looking at how can we work with telecoms, how can we embed you within the Berlin marketplace. And again, I think we're trying to take what we learned from London in terms of who we're engaging with to actually then kind of follow the same route. But I don't think it's necessarily something that we're only looking at in terms of, you know, a westernized context. We have some really interesting conversations happening in Uganda, in Rwanda, in potentially Nigeria. So even as potentially just almost like a research arm, Safe in the City could be a really, you know, great way of measuring or creating a, maybe a low-cost SMS-based way of informing people and getting information back.
That's fascinating to see all the different actors in place, and that is not just centralized. I just want to say hey to Ramahe. I always have a problem with your name. I think you need at some point to send me some phonetic pronunciation. Who says thank you so much for bringing such successful people and inspiring us. Well, welcome, and thanks to you for coming. They are definitely fantastic guests. So the name of the company is Safe in the City. I guess the website is quite straightforward. It is safeinthecity. Right?
And the city. Just remember the and.
The and, yes. The symbol. And thanks again for joining us.
Yeah.
So really briefly, I'd like to ask you about the monetization side, because yes, it is solving a big social issue, but it is also a business, first of all, a business. So what is the monetization system for your startup? Is the app free for everyone, for the end users? And in this case, who's paying?
Great question.
So the app's free, and we aim to keep the app always free. We believe that the safety features of the app shouldn't have a cost to anyone. What our main thing we're kind of exploring at the moment is events and venue based security. So I think Joe touched on it quite briefly earlier, where you can come into a place, whether it's somewhere like the O2, And when things happen to you there, we can provide more of a real-time response because there's on-site security, there's bouncers, there's that type of thing. And off the back of that, we can take all that data that we collected, provide reports and insights to figure out what they've done really well, firstly, which is important, mm-hmm. what maybe they need to improve on, and kind of make some consultation, recommendation-based things on that. So, yeah, that's kind of the one of the first things. There's quite a few things that we're exploring, but...
So that's something that we can, you know, whether it's a New Year's Eve party and we can help, you know, guide people through predetermined routes, mm-hmm. or if it's something more like a large festival where, again, we can make sure that not only the reports that people are doing in real time can actually be addressed, whether it's, hey, do you want to talk to someone about this? If not, that's okay. But we're so grateful that we know about the situation now, and again, being able to now look at what's next year's event, how can we improve that, and then just continue on like measuring that change and being able to really shout out about all of the great work that you're able to provide. So that's, yeah, our events proposition. We also have an integrations, I guess, licensing model. Mm-hmm. So What Three Words was our biggest. If you haven't heard of them, they're great. They're one of our partners. So
just to mention on that, What Three Words is actually a location system that locates you just a few meters. Like the precision is just a few meters away, and it's using three words to locate you precisely anywhere in the world.
Let's see where we are right now.
Yeah, sure. I'll make sure to put the link in the description of the video later on, so if anyone is interested in having a look, you can have a look and check what the name of your location. Well, I might not say that aloud.
Oh yeah, that's true. Of course. Okay, of course.
Just in case anyone wants to survive.
Yeah, maybe main studio. But
okay,
I mean, in terms of
three words here, and then you can see,
you can pick Safe in the City as one of the options of how you want to navigate. So that becomes something that we have a freemium model. So again, if you were Bumble and being like, great, you know, our ethos is about women making the first move and feeling safe on dates, mm-hmm. you know, how valuable that is to integrate into their story, to be able to say, okay, well, you Safe in the City, and it's only based on the number of people who want to take the safe route that they would get charged, and that's a big value add in that they don't have to do all the complication algorithms and you know, pieces and relationships that we've built, but it can continue to offer safety to their kind of specific networks, or, you know, massage or marketplace apps that come to your home. You know, there's a lot of technologies now that have a navigation component, but again, mm-hmm. I think we're trying to show that there's a little bit more than just going the fastest way. And then essentially we're building that events into kind of more of a SaaS platform, which is going to be in the next couple of years, that we're able to look at a lot bigger, complex, you know, areas and movements of people. But it could be something automated in terms of, it's just continually something.
Yeah,
you
so
can
we can
use
start
as a
to
tool.
Measure not only what's going on, but how it's improving based on things that's changing. So you can actually, if an area decides that they need to make a change, they can then start to measure the impact of that change as well.
So that's a big next step for you, right? That's a natural progression after that. That's interesting. Ramahe says that, are you guys software developers as well? And are you using native mobile app or hybrid mobile app, using Flutter or React Native? I guess that's a question for you, Gary. Gary is the CTO of Safe and
the
CTO.
So I've been an engineer for a long time. So
he's a protege. He's being very, very.
Jill pitches
humble.
My story better than I do.
That's my job.
Yeah, so the app's a React Native app, so it's cross-platform. But yeah. The Flutter thing looks really interesting. That's something I've been meaning to take a look at as well.
Okay. Well, I guess that answers your question here, Ramahe. Great. I think we covered quite a few things about the application itself and your business model and how the company works. Mm-hmm. Now I'd like to get more to your own story and your team. So how big is the team now? So Gillian, you're the CEO. Gary is the CTO. Who else is involved?
So we're really lucky of how many people we've had involved over since we started, I guess, since I, you know, started the company on my own as a crazy person does, we've had almost 50 people involved in some capacity, and mostly on kind of a voluntary or kind of a career progression basis. So Gary and I are the full-time team, and we have a couple. We have Miriam, we have Francine, who are our amazing advisors. We have Dave, who's he also has a company called Sidgrove. He's our CFO. We have Karen Gupta, who's our COO. He used to work at WeWork and Amazon, big BD experience, as well as, who am I missing?
There's so many.
Paul. You're starting and you're narrating.
Paul, Idea East, yeah. You want us to join as head of community. We have a number of really amazing women who helped us for almost 2 years, Naomi and Callie on social media. We've had Sana, we've had Zing. Thank you, Liz.
Do you feel that it's easier to get people involved because you have a mission? I'm asking that because a few months ago I had Oliver from RightsTD here, and he was a bit like you. He started on his own and then he started recruiting the people as soon as he got a little bit of first investment and first money. But he told me that it was actually easier for him, he found out, to recruit and get people involved because he really had a mission and a really specific mission, and it really helps with that. Do you feel the same way or not at all?
Yeah, absolutely. People come to us. Like, we actually had an intern from South Africa who paid his way to come and spend 2-3 weeks with us. We're very much pulled, and I think one of the challenges is like a lot of people want to get involved, but then, you know, finding a role for everyone can be as much work to kind of make sure that it's the right fit. And so we've actually, with Iwana's help, we've built out kind of different super user roles. So we have people who are kind of reporters who were like, hey, we have some online training to understand what is sexual harassment, what's bystander intervention, what's a safe site, what's the ethos behind Safe in the City, which again, we're happy to provide if you want to volunteer with us. And essentially being able to go into the spaces, whether it's a Freshers Week, we had some Freshers Week Queen Mary kind of super users out reporting different things. Or if it's kind of more of a larger role, like, hey, I have an organization that does community watch programs. I just want to be able to plug in, say, for the city, or, you know, maybe look at how that can also be a value add to my space. So we have kind of a few roles that we're kind of testing out, because I think it's shouldn't be a conversation everyone's having. Safety and how can we move this faster, whether it's because you're a minority or because, you know, you have to experience different types of things, like how can that actually now be recognized and changed?
And everyone, I guess, have their own contact and their own circle. So if they want to be involved and plug in some of this knowledge and contact, it's a fantastic way to go. And I think you kind of have to sometimes have roles that didn't exist before because just it makes sense for you.
Yeah.
So it's fine. Like, new jobs aren't popping up every day. I think it's okay.
And it helps us because, I mean, in some ways, you know, we're now raising investment and, you know, whether we say pre-Series A or Series A, it's interesting because we're like, well, you know, we're now, because of that mission, we've actually managed quite a lot of people and we've created a lot, you know, policies and procedures and ways of automating and being more efficient. So it's not kind of like, oh, it's just been us grinding away in our own little bubble and then, you know, having to, you know, be pushed into this other space and we're like, we don't know what to do. We're like, yeah, we're constantly doing all of these things.
Have you been bootstrapping until now? Or have you already got some institutional money coming in before?
So we did do a crowdfunding last November with I guess a company called, or a social enterprise that we were also getting some funding from, called Unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
So we raised successfully. We've received a grant from the Ordnet Survey, which is a mapping provider for the UK. And then we have received some funding from Vodafone.
Okay.
And then we've done some, commercial, early commercialization of our product. And now we're going for investment. It's another chapter of...
Part of the roller coaster.
Almost
done. Brexit is also making things tricky.
Ramahe asked if you're hiring developers for your company, and they say also that your app would be very successful in India because they have lots of problem for women's safety, and that could help millions of people.
Of course,
also. But yeah, about the development, I guess the question is: do you do everything on your own?
So for my sins. I cover all of the development stuff just now, which means I have a very, very long to-do list. But yeah, we've had some people working on it before, and it's had quite a lot of assistance to it. But for the last while, it's been me in the basement with the colourful keyboard. I mean, the biggest issue for me is I don't have enough hours in the day. Jill and I touch base regularly on the technical stuff and kind of go through what's the business priorities, how do we reflect that back and forth to make sure we're working on the right stuff, because there's so much stuff we want to do.
Mm-hmm.
The product backlog is a big one.
So please send us feedback as well. Because
we
don't know why you don't use it.
If you want to get to the top of my to-do list.
Yeah, exactly. So you're getting Gary's good books. We did have an agency that we did work with and you managed in India. There was actually 70% of them were female developers, which was a big selling point for us, called Squash Apps. You can look them up. Needed to evolve a little bit faster in terms of what type of things that we needed them to do. So it was
At some point, when you're a startup, it's always better to get it.
Yeah.
It's really hard on the long run to work with an agency.
Yeah, and we move so quickly as well that it's quite difficult from an outsourcing point of view to move that quickly and have that agility when it's outsourced. So,
And what about for you, Gillian? Because when we've met a long time ago, you were on your own, started this adventure. Was it really hard to get this started as a solo founder? What has been the hardest thing for now?
It's a really good question.
It's a roller coaster, right?
Yes. It's definitely... It was me kind of with the idea, but I wasn't... I did go through people I thought were potentially going to be co-founders or have longer-term roles. I think the challenge has always been kind of investment or kind of the business side, kind of which one's going to... The chicken or egg, which one's coming first, or kind of, I guess, the user base for that matter. But I think the challenge has definitely been... around funding and getting that kind of initial amount that you can actually run with and really prove out more on a level that people can maybe see how fast it could grow and scale, which I think we're now there, but it's something that that was really difficult to carry the workload of what I needed to do, learn all of the things that I didn't know. I mean, as I mentioned, I took a coding course to try to be like, how do I, learn some basics about code and understand a lot more about managing a technical team or getting involved in, I guess the whole industry. And I think that did motivate me to probably do some a lot more creative ways to circumvent the fact that I was kind of solo for a bit. So created Fem Tech Talks, which is a great community around a lot of things that women in tech would face, and with the hope that maybe there could be a CTO in there looking for something. He just happened to be sitting next to me. I was looking all over the city and just needed to look up. But I think that was the challenge, and I think there's a lot when you're on your own in terms of people thinking they can take advantage of you, or there's just a lot more risk involved, and people see you as very risky. So, you know, again, with different accelerators or investors, they're like, oh, you're by yourself and you're a woman and you're foreign and you know, you're non-technical. And I was like, oh my god, like, this is, yeah, I will be a unicorn just by default of the stats I've overcome if this works. But I think I've definitely, because it's so a problem, it's so ingrained in kind of my life and so many other people, like the stories that people share with us all the time are so personal, and what we're able to do, or, you know, something we've helped them out of, is really, you know, validating and keeps us going in a lot of ways.
You're also going to Berlin for some time really soon. What do you expect there? What kind of differences? Have you already started looking at potential investors based there and already get some feedback from the market? Or what are your expectations of the specificities of Berlin?
I don't think we put in as much groundwork just because the US, and then lots of stuff going on in London. So I think it will be kind of when I actually land there that we'll start going in. Vodafone's created such a, you know, intense and great program that does have a lot of investor networks, a lot of other corporates, partners, you know, entrepreneurs, scale-ups that we can learn from. We do have some investors that we know through London, and actually having some conversations in our co-working space last night, there was, you know, they were saying, actually, there's a lot of companies that you'll start and be like, hey, you're from London. And, you know, you'll start to see the companies that you're used to, but in different kind of contexts, or you pass them on the street. So I think Berlin is definitely somewhere that a lot of people are looking in terms of the next big kind of place in Europe, or, you know, whatever we decide, you know, that it will be a really big center point. So I'm really excited to kind of see what differences, or, you know, what's easier, what's not.
Rama, hey, just to ask about creating an app. As I said, that they want to also create an app, and they are wondering if they can do it on their own, or how many people are required to build an app. I think it's more for you.
Yeah,
Gary.
I mean, so,
because you mentioned that you have been working at an agency, but I guess you also have experience building an app on your own.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to build an app and you're trying to build a product from start, the most important thing I can tell you is make it as simple as possible, and don't try and make the most perfect thing, because there's no point. You have to... No matter what your idea is right now, it's going to change 100 times before anyone even takes a look at it. So learn the basics. If you want to do it, learn the basics of doing stuff. There's loads of stuff you can get off the shelf. Just make it simple and get something out there, build something. Doesn't matter if it's 10% of what your grand idea is. Just do something.
and find those ways that you can funnel you know, validation or traction, or, you know, the piece. So again, the simpler you make it, the easier you are to experiment. You know, is it an A-B test? If you're like, it's just this one feature, would you use this or not? There's also another really good book called The Mum Test. I really recommend, about how you can ask questions without asking them. So you're not like, do you like this? Like, because people often have a social bias that they'll say, yeah, it's great. Yeah. Like, and then you're like, why is no one downloading it?
I mean, that's another super, super important thing about building a product, is once you've got your 10% or your basic thing of something, speak to as many people about it as possible, because everyone has their own ideas, and what you're trying to do is please as many of those people as possible.
As I say, I am a challenge to about, without any degree can I get success in making apps or getting software devs jobs? And I think that's a question many people have. So
I don't have a degree. I started learning to code when I was 12 and was an engineer by 16, so you most certainly don't need a degree. What you need is a love for what you want to do and hard work.
How did you start it? How did you just get into this at 12?
I was really interested in graphic design stuff at the start, and some of the forums, when people used to go on forums, some of those had like some subsections which were about web development, and I literally got into it by right clicking and viewing the source of HTML. Just fell in love with it totally.
Amazing. What was the first app, was the first thing you developed on your own?
The first website I built on my own was a terrible example of anything. I think it had a red background and yellow text.
Hello world.
Yeah, it was absolutely terrible, but thankfully it's progressed slightly since then. So.
And I have too many degrees, and here I am. So.
And you don't need any of those to do what you do, but still, it's a good background.
I don't, but yeah, it definitely adds a lot of value.
So if you see anyone can have any kind of background and just make it happen, it's not about your degree, it's about what you do with that. So if you feel you need one, go get one. If you feel that you can actually learn on your own, just get to stuff. Just get started. Before we wrap up, I just also would like to know if along your journey, if there were anything in the startup scene here in the UK that you find extremely useful, or if there is actually something that was really missing.
I think for me personally, the most useful thing that I'd done when I entered the startup world was get a desk in a co-working space and sit next to all the people that you're trying to do similar things as. Like, just get in a place like that and speak to people. It's probably the most useful thing for me.
Yeah, I think getting into the community, that was the biggest thing that I was able to help Safe in the City keep going, and validating and talking to people and learning, is really creating those relationships and friendships and people in that space. Because if you're watching them do it, you're more likely to be like, I can do this, and this isn't, you know, the... oh, it's too hard, or I need a lot of money, or, you know, I need to look like this, or whatnot. And I think that's probably one of the biggest things that London has. It just has such a breadth of community. Yeah. And if the community's not there, like as I did, I was like, I'm going to make one. And that actually started growing. And that was really, you know, exciting as well, because it, you know, creates a niche in itself. I think in terms of what's missing, I still think that there's a big gap in terms of, you know, transparency of where funding is going, and a real effort to actually change the, I think, diversity in tech, diversity in business. So I think that's probably something. And I guess a lot of expectation that, you know, startups can do, they can kind of be taken advantage of, like, you can do a free trial, you can use our branding, you can, you know, so it's an extra strain to have that pressure, because you have a great opportunity, and, you know, but you're like, you know, we need skin in the game to keep going. And I think that's the difficulty. And I think that's probably something in the UK, just the competitiveness can be really, really challenging, because if everyone's making it free, or can do 5 free trials ahead of you at, you know, less cost, then you're just like, when am I gonna, you know, actually kind of get those metrics that maybe more conservative investors in the UK are looking for.
So I think we're reaching the end of the interview now. So where can we find you next?
You can find us online, so www.safeinthecity.com. All the social media handles are Safe in the City. Again, download the app on the App Store, iOS or Android. And we will be doing a Women in Data conference in November. Mm-hmm. So that's a big one coming up. Sign up online. I think they actually do have a lottery for tickets in London. We will also be doing a demo day if you happen to be in Berlin, so you can always check us out end of November as well. But yeah, we're gonna try to do a lot more of these, so like live and more conversations, so people get to know who we are, what we're trying to do, and, you know, kind of be involved in the conversation.
Huge thanks to Gillian and Gary from Safe in the City for joining me on the stream today. And thanks to all of you for listening to Entrepreneurs Playing Games podcast edition. You can find me on Twitter at Amandine Flax, and be sure to check out my YouTube channel at youtube.com/AmandineFlax for the full video version of our discussion and much more. Also, if you want to join the live stream and ask your own question to our next guest, Entrepreneurs Playing Games is taking place every 2 weeks on Saturday morning. So keep an eye on our social media, and I hope to see you there very soon.